to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Hi, it's Carol, co-host of The Divine Breadcrumb. This episode is brought to you by Carol L. Campos Coaching. Why coach with me when there are so many coaches out there? I do things differently. I don't jump right into your goal. Why? Well, what I've learned is that the subconscious mind is running 90% of the show. That's where we start. We clear any emotional blocks and limiting beliefs first, making sure you know your why and are aligned with where you're headed before tackling your goal. Whether you want to change careers or simply want more joy in your life, I can teach you strategies to help you gain the clarity needed to go where your heart is calling. To get started, I invite you to sign up for a free discovery session at carollcampos.com. Together, let's light your path. Hi, everyone. This is Carol.
This is Deb. Welcome back to The Divine Breadcrumb.
Yes, welcome back. So today we're talking with transformational guide Haas Sadeghi. At his core, Haas transforms and clarifies the energetic and relational roots of the personal and team dynamic, as well as business system problems. He brings clarity and alignment to systems and relationships, encourages making the unseen seen, hones the power of communication, and empowers transformative growth and healing. And would you believe that Haas is also a lawyer? Between 2016 and 2018, after enduring two back-to-back family tragedies and experiencing severe burnout, Haas went on a sabbatical to do some soul searching, and it was there that he immersed himself in healing and energetic science trainings. Haas now guides leaders, visionaries, and teams through transformations, showing them how to reconnect with their full power and create from a clarified vision. And during these unprecedented times, Haas is also helping teams unite and connect on a deeper level while working remotely. So much to get to. Welcome, Haas. We're happy to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you. It's still surreal to hear my intro and see where I've ended up in life.
I'll bet. Yes. So I was really curious, what do you mean when you say making the unseen seen?
That's a good question. So much of our beingness is non-physical. You know, people understand the metaphysical. So a lot of, say, team dynamics, for instance, are based on metacommunication, things that are unseen, for instance, to use that as an example. So not necessarily data or things that we see tangibly, they're unseen or extrasensory. And so a lot of my work is talking to people and teams and leaders and really having them hone in on that unseen data that's actually impacting their teams and their own leadership and their systems, whether it be their individual systems or the team systems. So it's really about, you know, another way of putting it is the elephant in the room, for instance, in team conflict. So yeah, that's a vivid example of like the tension or the conflict, as they say, the elephant in the room. Outside of the tension or the conflict, it can be that, like I said, the extrasensory data.
Yes. What are some of the other things you've seen?
I mean, we can go really far down the proverbial rabbit hole. For example, in one-on-one work with leaders, a lot of my craft is around waking them up to their own personal power and their clarified vision. So as far as the unseen within a leader, for example, people have limiting beliefs and blind spots that are operating and affecting the way they're showing up as leaders and visionaries. And a lot of them don't see that. It's unseen to them. And so it's that aspect on the intrapersonal level or the transpersonal level is taking their awareness within themselves to really see what's unseen within them. Another example is emotional traumas. A lot of people are operating with reactivity and automatic behaviors that are based on or housed upon emotional traumas that they've forgotten or they've suppressed. That's another example of making the unseen seen, really shifting their awareness as a leader to those areas that are impacting the way they're showing up or curbing their power or clouding their vision. Or really, there's a lot of facets or multidimensionality to that.
Right. I love all that because it's very much in alignment with the work I do. Have you run across leaders, and well, I'm sure you do, that they're really surprised by some of the things that are uncovered as you go through this work?
Definitely. Yeah. And it's, it depends on the level of work somebody's done. I mean, I work with very advanced beings as well. So like I always refer to it as leading the leader, so to speak. So even if they've done a lot of work, the potency and that level of awareness shift can be surprising even for the more advanced person that's done a lot of inner work or a lot of advanced energetic work or metaphysical work or overall transpersonal work and visionary work. So yeah, it surprises everybody, and it even surprises me sometimes what's uncovered and what's really clarified, because it really is a divine magic that unfolds if the participants, whether it be the teamwork that I'm facilitating, and I call it the cauldron of alchemy, you know, we open a space, you know, and that's another aspect of the unseen space. Like when you sit with somebody and you listen in the, I guess you could say the New Age vernacular, it's holding space. And what that means is it's, you know, the unseen of the space itself, space time, you know, that there's a lot that we could talk about. And so for me, I'm always surprised. And I sense that the transformative work that I do, usually people are not only surprised and pleasantly so, the impact of doing this level of work, of bringing the unseen and making it seen, to hone on that facet of what I do, it really is the most pivotal work we can do.
Agreed.
Yes. And with times being so uncertain and sort of all the confusion that's going on right now, do you have any tips for our listeners as to like how they can use this period to renew and sort of create new in their life?
Yeah, beautiful question. Right now, and with the spring season and Passover and Easter, and we have Ramadan and all these religious celebrations that are about, you know, going within, finding renewal, regeneration. And I sense that this world pause has happened at a very divine time as well. You know, it's another proverbial divine breadcrumb where the universe is really leading us to go within. As far as with teams, I've been doing the bulk of my work, both digitally and before this all happened, I had already made the shift more or less to the digital arena, being younger in age as well, I guess the millennial vibe within me. So I didn't really sense that much of a shift personally. And I was also in sabbatical. So when I was doing this work with teams before this proverbial big pause that we've all undergone, I already was using communication to bring teams closer together. So I would say, as far as team tips, number one, transparency is huge. And we're hearing a lot more about that in the business arena. We're hearing a lot of CEOs, leaders, upper management becoming more transparent. And what that does is, secondly, it espouses vulnerability. And by leading with that vulnerability hand in hand with transparency, if the communication is really fused with vulnerability and transparency, you get what I call commune with an E, communication. You actually connect people on an energetic level. You bring them closer together. And then really the third, as far as teams goes, other than espousing transparency and vulnerability, is for people to revisit their visions. And as a team, revisiting your vision is involving everybody. So really going back to the proverbial drawing board, a lot of what I do is bringing teams together to develop a charter. And I use the analogy of a ship. Right now, we're in uncharted water. And so any playbook, any teams created, you know, back to this unseen, so much of the landscape has shifted. And so it makes even more sense to say, okay, where are we headed as a team in this proverbial ship? what are the landmines or the icebergs we could hit? And then by doing that, if done in a transparent and vulnerable way, the impact and the rapid, I guess you could say, unifying effect that that has that I've seen is pretty remarkable and will not only help people on teams transform through this time, it'll help them recalibrate and really thrive. On a personal level, for leaders, for visionaries, everybody needs to really get my favorite quote, or one of my favorite quotes, because I have so many, is it's a Buddhist quote, is this is all an inside game. Mm-hmm. And now science is showing us so much of what's going on in reality is within us. You know, you have a lot of research that's converging on, this is essentially all a hologram for us as far as reality is construed at a very sub level. And so by going within, the first step that I've done myself that really transformed me and brought me to where I am and my purpose and my calling and my mission is stillness. And with that stillness, we're able to actually bring real awareness. So the first step is really that. And second for leaders is grounding in breath. So many people I talk to are breathing incorrectly. And I know that seems rudimentary for the listeners. It's huge because of the impact that breath has on our biofunction as a system, our awareness, our presence, and then more importantly, our immune function and CNS, central nervous system, which work hand in hand. If people can first get still, get aware, and then anchor in their breath, as some of the meditative and mindfulness practitioners call it, center in their breath, that in and of itself causes a huge shift that can really be automatic. And then lastly, being gentle on themselves. So many people during this time, I myself am a very harsh critic of myself, very high performing perfectionist, and even as much inner work as I've done, at times I have to remember to be gentle, offer myself forgiveness. So with that awareness shift, with that anchoring in breath, a lot will come up for us. And that's why it's important to round it out with being gentle. And then after that, really easy, intuition, feel your way forward. If you do that, this proverbial, what do I do next, Haas question that I get is answered on its own, because it's step by step. We feel our way forward once we're still, once we're aware, once we have that breath, and when we're really gentle on ourselves and we offer that self-compassion, that self-forgiveness, the steps will unfold when we feel our way forward.
Oh, I love that. This information is gold. I'm curious, because you touched on helping people in leadership be vulnerable. How have you found that to be? Because, you know, I was in corporate for over 20 years and there weren't many leaders who were willing to be vulnerable.
Good. Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, first of all, it's a cultural facet to it that I've discovered. I studied international and so much of the last few years I've gone back to more of my global work. And I was pleasantly surprised that, first of all, we do have a culture shift that's still ongoing in America. This whole work hard, you know, the alpha, you have to, you know, if you're an entrepreneur or you're a visionary, you have to sacrifice, you have to have really long days and things of that nature. There is this notion of vulnerability being scoffed at more in our culture, in the American culture, than throughout the world. Not to say that other cultures don't have this for other cultural reasons. So I would say, localizing it to Americans listening here, it really isn't something that, it's not any longer a option for us. It's a necessity, as I see it, this vulnerability. And both from a business landscape shift, the consumers are demanding vulnerability because we're awakening to our humanity more, or as I call it, we're reconnecting to our humanness. So as far as a market share in the business corporate world, it makes monetary sense. Now, obviously, you have to be in authenticity and alignment as a leader. You can't do it in a very, you know, phony way. So I would say it's good business now. Secondly, what I mean by it's no longer a luxury or an option, it's a necessity, is those that are going to make it through this shift are going to be the ones. And vulnerability for me is really a strength. It takes more strength, as Herman Hesse says, to let go than to hold on, to be, you know, stiff upper lip and to really mask and to suppress feeling, sensitivity, you know, humanness, you know, or to put another angle to it, Shakespeare once said it best, if you prick me, do I not bleed? You know, innate in all of us is a vulnerability. That's humanness. And so I had resistance before my own awakening, and I equate it to my own inner resistance, right? It's all an inside game. Because my first book that I'm toying with is How I Used to Be a Jerk and Didn't Know It. So for me, yeah, I that's how I know it's the right title for my first book, because you don't even know me and I do that. You know, I've had ex-lovers who have said that, laughed at me when I've said that. And that's how I knew I was onto something. And that for me, what that signified was I didn't know the potency of vulnerability. That's what led to my burnout, in a sense. That's what led to some of the pains that I experienced, my brother's passing, and not being able to be in tune with my sensitivities or even my humanness, my vulnerability, to have the capacity to be with him. So on a personal level, we're starting to see more and more leaders, even if they're in corporate, back to that Shakespeare quote, they're human, they bleed. And it's an inevitability of this great awakening. It really is hearkening us to go back to our humanness. And again, the base of our humanness is vulnerability. So any resistance that I saw, I felt was within myself. Once I did this, you know, really rapid process during my sabbatical, the last really 2 years before 2019, it shifted within me, because I was so in alignment. And that's what I show leaders. When you are the very thing you're showing and espousing, you vibrate it, you emit it, you are it. And it made my work bringing vulnerability out of leaders easier once I had embraced my own vulnerability. And that's really personal responsibility at its core. So I would say at first it was probably similar to your experience. It was, you know, a little resistance. Then once I saw my own resistance and I embraced it, then I saw, okay. And I'm not a cockeyed optimist. I mean, there are other people that are still waking up and still that old paradigm. It makes it easier for me because I'm not leading by example. I'm not trying to force an outcome. I simply am vulnerable. And that's part of my, I guess you could say, magic. It unfolds the vulnerability around me. I bring it out. I trigger it. And that's because I emit it. And that's a, you know, I guess a deeper level of understanding of energetics, which I digress from.
Now, thank you so much for sharing all that. And, you know, I've been talking with a few people lately, and I think I don't fear for the future so much. I think the only thing that I think about is like, oh gosh, I don't want it to go back to the way it was. I'm, you know, like you, you know, you want that transformation and to see more people awaken. That would be scarier to me, is things reverting back to the way they were.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you in principle, and I became a big stoic in a good, healthy way, because a lot of inner work from my perspective, from my philosophy, is really geared around non-attachment, because the only constant is change. And if we attach to an outcome per se, that, oh no, if I don't get this, I'm not the X, Y, and Z, what will inevitably happen is A, the universe is going to surprise us. We plan, God laughs. You know, we set outcomes. Mm-hmm. The universe goes and says, wait, not like that, like this, because it's thy will be done, as I'm learning and practicing and mastering. It's not our will. It's a universal will. And so where I'm going with this, I know it seems a little tangential, is, you know, very much of this concept of prepare for the loss, prepare for this notion of you may not get what you want. And then you'll be pleasantly surprised, because you're in this equanimous state, this very neutral state, where you will then get whatever you want. A, B, when you're there, you're not creating resistance. You're not subtly or subconsciously resisting, oh no, this fear of, you know, even if it's there 1%, it's still in our operative field. It's still in our field of consciousness. And that which we resist, we persist. So if we're still fighting our innate, like 1% of like, I really don't want it to go back to that. Oh no. You know, and we have that, it's there. And energetically, that conjoined with the first point, which is this concept of we're not neutral, we're charged, because we're secretly fearing or hoping. And that, it affects in manifestation. It affects the way we're able to actualize. So I've really become a stoic, and I think it was Lao Tzu, and I believe Bruce Lee said it in the martial arts. They say, prepare for the loss before it even happens, and then go into battle, and then you'll win, because it's a mental preparation. And that's really what I'm talking about, is this inner preparation. So I sense whatever happens, I agree with you in principle, it's going to be good. The universe only expands. It's only good in the end. If it's not good, it's not the end. And so we're going to get it. It's more of our people are in angst right now. I'll leave this point on here. People are in angst right now because so many are holding their breath. So many are on edge. And that's this subconscious elephant in the room. That's another making the unseen scene. Some fear is within each person. Confront that fear. Make peace with that fear. Be neutral with the outcome and see what happens. Allow the universe to surprise you and conspire to serve you, because it will. Those divine breadcrumbs will manifest even more after that.
Exactly, exactly. So switching gears a little bit, there are so many that are working remotely for the first time in many cases. So what are some ways that teams can unite or facilitate deeper connections at this time?
Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful question. I have always been a fan of improv. It was infused in my dispute resolution training at Pepperdine. And I actually got to train with the Gremlins in LA and things of that nature. And there's so many wonderful colleagues on LinkedIn now, Gary Ware, Kathy, I forget her name. I shouldn't forget it. She's also really big in play. Benjamin Wersinski, who's in play. So these people are touching on play and improv. And for me, that's huge. And here's what I mean on a pragmatic level. If you're facilitating your own team meetings, for example, even if it's a small team, it's harder to do with big teams, especially in a very large conglomerate, because it's harder to corral the proverbial cats. If you can get your team to start a Zoom meeting or whatever platform you're using with some improv, which is innately vulnerability. It's people letting their proverbial hair down. It's getting silly. It's getting loose. It's getting vulnerable. If we can do that, that sets a very beautiful dynamic. And I'm seeing it more and more be embraced, because it is new, as you said, for a lot of people to be in a digital space suddenly and not have that interface. And that also touches on this human level. When we do improv or play, or we really invite in a improvisational atmosphere, we also can create a little bit more of an opening in the air, and people can really like, oh, okay. And it has a multifaceted effect. So that's one. Two, people need to understand that right now what everybody's craving is connection. And that's why improvisation for me helps with team connection. So furthering that team connection that you can start building with improv or play is this concept of find the common node. Right now, our bonds have shifted because we have shifted. Society has shifted. The circumstances have shifted. So we need to revisit how is everybody relating to these changes, orient everyone, and then find and reestablish these bonds of connection that we used to have. For example, in the corporation, I knew, for instance, the accounting team at one company that I happen to know some people at. They would go to a lunch on a certain day, and that was their culture. That was their ritual. Well, that was one way those bonds were formulated. Well, that's all gone now. And so some of the ways we used to bond, and for the sake of time, we can't get too much into it. What I mean by relational alchemy is there's a dynamic that happens in teams. And once these bonds have shifted, these channels of communication have shifted, we have to revisit them and reestablish them. So that's the second thing, is how can we then foster more connection by reestablishing our bonds? And what that looks like is, how are we all now relating to the team, to the shifts at working at home, to our new vision, both personally and for the company or the team or the management team, for instance? So that 1-2 already right there has a big impact. And that's already two big shifts that are hard for a lot of teams to make. To embrace a improv culture, and then to revisit, because so many people want to move forward. They don't want to revisit the foundations of their relational dynamics. And that's why the second point for me really has an impact with the teams I work with.
That's a lot to unpack.
I apologize. I'm doing the best I can to keep it.
It was really, really good. But like, I feel like I needed to have some kind of comment prepared and I'm still thinking about it. So thank you for that. I'm sure I will get even more out of it when I listen to the recording.
Yeah. And as I was listening, I was thinking about the fact that, you know, when you're at work and you're seeing people day to day, you feel comfortable. And what's been fascinating to me to observe is how stressed people are about getting on video with people they know very well, who they used to see every day. It's like seeing each other in a new way. And I know part of it is just being self-conscious about being on video, but it's just interesting to me that that's kind of a fear with people.
It's interesting. I sense it's anything new frightens us, doesn't it? I mean, it's our human nature. Newness at its core, novelty brings a certain amount of stress because we have this existential. I put a quote up on LinkedIn yesterday that I had seen from Eric Fromm, which man is innately an insane being, which is we're part of nature and we transcend nature because part of nature is change, constantly change, dynamic change, flux. And then our humanness, like for me, for example, I have a morning ritual. Right. We have these Linus from the, you know, from the Peanuts game. We have these safety blankets that we carry with us that are constants, that are constant. And that's what Eric Fromm meant in that quote, that we're an insane being at a fundamental level because we're at odds with our nature. So that's why I sense people have stress. This is new. And so I've seen Bill, I've seen Stacy million times at the water cooler. Oh my God. Now they're on camera. It's the newness. It's the, what am I going to do? How am I going to relate to this? Because again, we haven't ever had this unique opportunity to reflect upon ourselves the way we were doing. Humanity was on autopilot for so long. We had been disconnected and we were unaware. We were reactively living. A lot of what I show people is how to step into clarity, into their power, into their bliss. And that's all geared around awareness. Around reflective being, response ability. And that's why I think people are stressing out right now, is because nobody's actually really been awake. A lot of us, and myself included, were on autopilot. And now this autopilot's been jolted and everybody's like, oh, what's going on? And we're faced with no security blankets. All the security blankets we used to have are gone. And so now we're raw and we're naked, and it's stressful to be raw and naked in a new environment where there's uncertainty and you don't know what's going to happen. And it's perpetual change, and there's no centering within oneself. There's no orienting. That's startling, to say the least.
Absolutely. But it's also a really cool thing that people are forming these deep connections, even though they're not face-to-face. It might be on camera, but yet it's all, as you know, it's all energy. So that connection happening in this environment, I think, is a really great thing.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's great research out of HeartMath that I sent you both may have heard of in terms of the biofield and the morphogenic field, which is really our collective field. We each individually emit an energy field and we have a biofield. And then when we get around somebody, like say, for instance, you know, you and Deb, Carol have been working together for a while, we don't even have to be in connection physically. Our biofield transcends space-time. Again, that's the unseen aspect of our beingness. Is we think so much everything's physical. It's not. And so when you get in a digital space, it doesn't matter. It does take more time to regroove the energy field and to get into coherence and to connect, which is why, you know, those exercises or those tips I alluded to will foster and rapidly, you know, bring that about. We don't really have to do much to connect. All we have to do is be present. And that's why, maybe like you allude to, we're getting deeper connections because people are getting deeper in themselves. That's what this is doing. It's forcing them to really get in touch with their innate connection with themselves. And that's why we're seeing more powerful, albeit digital, more powerful connections forming because of these energetics that are in the space.
Well, you're definitely speaking our language. We're big fans of HeartMath. And in fact, I was certified as an Ad Heart facilitator by HeartMath. I love everything they do. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's an awesome organization. I, if I were to put on a bucket list sitting with Doc and then Michael Singer, that would be two geek-out-centered geek-out sessions I'd love to have, or with those two gurus. So, yeah.
Haas, tell our listeners a little bit about your services. What do quantum mastery and consciousness engineering mean?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I, on my journey, I was very fortunate, you know, by an eldest sibling who's very much in that transformative, integrative, new age space. I saw within myself a problem. And what I faced personally became part of what I was bringing forth and then made more of like a formal offering. More by following these, again, this very much the theme of your show, the divine breadcrumbs. The foundations of what I do and consciousness itself, people don't understand how what consciousness is, let alone how to be conscious. So what I found is so many people are doing advanced work, whether it be meditation, breath work, you know, really advanced energy work, and the foundation wasn't there. And what I discovered was it's like you're building a leaning tower of Pisa on a very unstable foundation. So for me, what consciousness engineering means is to consciously engineer your state of beingness. So now we're finding science is showing us alpha state. You know, you have gamma state, theta state. You have all these brain states that then espouse different things, like alpha is relaxation. There's more and more understanding of the mechanisms within us, the human, I call it the human technologies, how we can actually use our inner energetic systems to consciously engineer the states that we want, to get where we want to go, to have a clarity of vision, and to reclaim our power. So that's the one element that I mean by conscious engineering, is how do you actually use your inner engineering systems, your energetic systems. How do you consciously tap into them? And how do you configure them to get what you want and to become the master of your domain, so to speak? And by quantum mastery, for the first time in a long time, humanity is at a very beautiful precipice because we can access higher energy centers. For instance, the human design team that really brought forth the human design tool, they talk about humanity making a jump in their evolution and adding two chakras, I believe it was 30 or 40 years ago. And in a, you know, I believe another 20 or 30 years, we're going to add another few more chakras, or to put it into another vernacular, energy, higher energy centers. So by quantum mastery, because I took 2 years in self-imposed isolation, I did, you know, powerful initiations, both from the indigenous schools, as well as the energetic schools, you know, vis-a-vis guys like Dispenza, Greg Braden. You know, I didn't train with Dispenza. I was exposed to the same stuff that they're converging upon, coupled with the shamanic and the indigenous stuff. And what I found was, and what I was quote unquote being downloaded and accessing, was higher energy centers are, for the first time ever, we can access them. We can up level. We can literally up level and enhance our extrasensory abilities and further our inner ascension and evolution. So that's what I show people. And it's not for everybody. The foundations that I have to prepare people for, if they're new or neophytes to any of this work, is breath work, how to actually have functional health. A lot of it is centered on TCM and Qigong, on showing them, okay, how do you actually stand? What's your posture like? It's infusing an integrative approach for them to be able to then do the advanced stuff, which is actually allowing more bioelectric and magnetic current through their physical form. And that makes your, in the Vedic, I'll leave you with this, the Vedic tradition, they said with this level of training, you would get siddhis or superpowers. And, you know, you may not be able to fly like Superman. You can enhance your God-given senses. You can develop telekinetic or clairaudience, or these are all gifts that we may have that we have to unlock or enhance. That's what quantum mastery is for me. It's how do you unlock your power, your innate power? And if you've already done that work, how do you up level it and enhance it?
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And what gratifying work.
It is because it's a lot of the luxury that I have, and thank you for saying that. I'm very blessed, and I remind myself, and that's part of my gratitude practice, because not only is it gratifying for me, it's very fulfilling because whether it be a new person or somebody that's very advanced, you know, I work with a lot of people that are very potent, powerful visionaries that are, you know, very advanced in their practices. And here I come along, and I would have never imagined that I get to unleash them, and that then amplifies the collective ascension. And so that's why for me, it's the most fulfilling, because I'm really interested in serving the collective good right now and really helping humanity as a whole get through this up-level that we're all going through. And so it's play, you know, and that's, you, as you both know, when your work becomes your play, that's it. I mean, game over. Like that's, you're never going to retire. You're simply playing for the rest of your dimension.
Absolutely.
I love that. Well, that's a great note to end on. I mean, honestly, we say this to a lot of our guests, but we could listen all day because this is, you know, some of our favorite conversations. So thank you, Haas, so much for spending your time with us today.
It's a pleasure. And I echo that sentiment, and I didn't spend anything. This was play for me, and it was exciting to get to meet you better on an informal level, Deb. And thank you, Carol, for the invitation and for sharing space.
Absolutely.
Yes,
thank
absolutely.
You.
So Haas, where can people find you online?
Yeah, so I'm actually on LinkedIn is the most active platform I'm using. Relational Alchemist, www.relationalalchemist.com. And I'm in the process of, because so much of this healing work I was doing is an avocation, I'm in the process of launching my quantum guide website. So for now, if people can go to LinkedIn and or Relational Alchemist, I'm readily accessible. The problem is, and the challenge is, when you're an attorney, you're public record. So a simple Google search of Haas Sadeghi will find me. LinkedIn for now seems to be my favorite. Yeah.
Great. We will put that in the show notes so that people can find you and follow up with you. And I've taken a look at your website, and there's so much great information there. So I do suggest everybody go check it out, because there's just some great content there, and we'll make you think.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that, Deb.
So again, thank you for joining us, and everybody listening, thanks for joining us today. As always, you can catch the show on our website, thedivinebreadcrumb.com, Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you're hearing, just drop us a hello or a review. Let us know what you think. If there's other things you want to hear us talk about or guests that you think would be a great addition to the show, just let us know. Haas, thank you again.
My pleasure. Thank you both. Blessings.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you next time.